Hi, welcome everyone to the Emotionally Healthy Leader Podcast. So good to be with you today. And our topic today is how and how not to choose your next 3 and 12 disciples. How and how not to choose your next 3 and 12 disciples. Now, in Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, over the years, we talk a lot about what we call an upside down funnel. And you've got on one side, you got discipleship done as it's done in standard ways around the world today. And that funnel is got primarily get people into the doors. We put our energy into attend, serve, and give. And then hopefully out of that comes some disciples, and then the 70 and the 12 and the 3 and a few people go out. The Jesus discipleship strategy was the exact opposite. He focused on the 3, Peter, James, and John. Then he had the 12 disciples, whom he called apostles. Then he had the 70, and beyond that, he had the 500 and the multitudes. It was upside down. And so we're here today because of Jesus' discipleship strategy, which actually is the upside down funnel from what we do today. And so today, and so as a result, we put our best energies, obviously, into getting people into the door, getting them connected through small groups or ministries, and then get them serving with their gifts. The problem is, when we got to build the organization and build the infrastructure so people actually stay. And we preach with the goal, again, of investing in a lot of people as we're preaching sermons and teaching classes, etc. The problem is that very often what happens in that model is there's not a lot left over for discipleship. And so in the Western church around the world today, we've got a small return of the enormous investment of our energies. And again, the idea of discipling a 3 and a 12 and focusing on a few can just feel so small, so insignificant that we say, oh my gosh, where would I ever find time for such a thing? And it just doesn't seem relevant. And so as a result, people are shallow in our churches, and we've got large numbers of people who are kind of squeezing Jesus into their already very busy lives, not really making decisions out of his lordship and listening to his voice. And really our job description for 99% of us here is to build our ministry, to get people to fill roles and to expand the ministry out into the church and the world, and basically fill those slots with people as we expand. And the reason this is such an important topic, such a critical topic, is what Jesus did. I mean, Jesus modeled for us. I mean, he invested in the 12, and in particular, Peter, James, and John, the 3 within the 12. And as time went on in his 3-year ministry, he gives more time, not less time to them. And then, of course, he commands us to do the same thing in making disciples of all nations, Matthew 28, and teaching everyone to obey everything that Jesus taught. And actually, Jesus models for us that preaching is just not enough. I mean, he preached to the multitudes, but he knew that was not the way to develop leaders for the long term once he left. And this is of such importance for us today, and the future of the next generation actually depends on it. So I'm quite passionate for this. And so my goal here is not to justify why we should do it, because I believe most of you are convinced, yes, we need to. The question is, how? And how do I actually choose who and who not to invest in? And then what do I actually do once they're here? You know, how do I actually develop them? So I'm going to break today up actually into 3 parts. How do we choose who to invest in, who not to invest in? Second part is going to be, what do we actually do with them, which is critically important. And then thirdly, I'm going to answer a few FAQs that come up a lot around this topic. So let's talk about, number one, who do I invest in and who do I not invest in? When I think about the 3 and the 12. Well, here's who not to disciple and who not to mentor. And these are all coming out of, again, my decades of mistakes. First of all, we don't want to invest in people that, in a sense, see themselves as already formed. In other words, they've been shaped in such a way that their soil is, in a sense, already done. Like, they're open to a certain extent, but not really open and teachable. And so a mistake I made often, I find gifted people that I thought could be great leaders, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to disciple them. And then when they're with me, they're going to realize, oh man, I got to change. And a mistake I made. And so I found that, yeah, maybe they want some of what I'm offering, but they don't want all of it. And they're guarded as a result. And I got some names here on my list of people I thought initially were, oh, such, this is going to be great. And then I realized, oh no, they're pretty much formed already. And they're not interested in getting reformed, reshaped by Jesus, at least under my leadership. And so the temptation, of course, is in this context, in these situations, is I see someone or you see someone who's gifted, who's smart, who's resourceful, who's a leader, and you say, oh man, they could have such a big impact. And you just kind of go with them until you realize, oh, they're really not that open to be shaped and formed by me already. That's already been done. So that's the first big mistake. The second is the people that you're investing in don't actually fit in to what your calling is. In other words, what God's given you to do. Again, in my case, I was a local church pastor for 26 years. I mean, I was called to build a local church. And that had a lot of different facets to it. There are people that come into your midst. They may become part of your ministry, and your ministry may be youth or children or marketplace or global or parachurch in some region of the world. But they have a different vision. I can think of one person who came in and he wanted to be a professor of a theological school, a Bible school. And that's what his interest was. Local church was kind of periphery to him. And so that was a clash for us because he kept wanting to make it kind of like a school. And a church is, yeah, there's a school element, but we're not a school. And I think of another person who wanted to do more of a house church model, not our model of a local church. And so he wanted to keep the church to 10 to 15 people, different vision. And so it didn't fit in within my vision because we're stewards. So whatever God's given you to do, you're stewarding your calling, your role that God's put you in right now. And so in a sense, you're looking to develop high impact, hopefully leaders and disciples within that sphere as well. A third category of people you do not want to invest in as your 3 and 12 are people who are who are in crisis. I'll just call it crises. Whether they're in a full addiction or they're coming out of a criminal activity or some kind of affair or divorce or they're just distracted with their crises right now that they're not in a place to do an intensive mentoring of 3 and a 12 right now. Their time and energy is given to that. In fact, speaking of crises, I had one person, what happened more than once, who actually had a DSM-5 personality disorder, something that required a psychiatrist, which I'm not. I'm a pastor. I'm a leader in God's church. And it was just beyond me. And as much as my wife and I were involved in mentoring him, we found ourselves constantly hitting a wall. And we realized over time, and he finally realized over time, he actually needed professional help, that a mentoring context was not going to work, you know, for him. A fourth category of people not to invest in as your 3 and 12 are people that maybe make a great first impression, but they're not the kind of folks that are actually going to follow through. I get very impressed with people who look amazing in first impression, second impression. They seem hungry, they're gifted, they're zealous, they're all in. But they're not, and I don't give it time. And so I start investing in them deeply and I realize, oh, over time, it's not good. So I don't give the time to sort that out. Another category of people not to invest in are people who don't have time. They're just not available. They actually may be teachable. They actually may be teachable. They're faithful, but they don't have time. And their season of life is such that they can't. Maybe they've got multiple small children that they have to take care of. They don't have help with that. Or maybe they are financially under tremendous stress. They're working 3 jobs. Maybe they're caring for aging parents or, again, some kind of physical ailment in the home, but they just don't have much space. Now, again, it doesn't knock them out completely, but it's a real limit. I had one person in particular over the years that was just faithful. He was teachable, but he wasn't available. He had a significant position on our board, deacon board level person, but he had a very intense job. He had to work 55, 60 hours a week. He had small children. But I did find a way to mentor him on the side because he was such a strategic person and he was faithful. He was teachable. It just was a season of life. And so Jerry and I figured out ways over the years to invest in him, but he wasn't quite in our 3 and 12 that we invested in, but it worked out good. So the question is, who do I mentor, Pete? Well, the most obvious is whatever ministry you're involved in, or again, your nonprofit, the most obvious is your team or your staff, paid or unpaid, volunteered or not, because they're your team. That's ideal. Your board also is, you know, if you've got a board that you report to, if that's applicable, that often has good people in it to invest in. I would say thirdly is high impact leaders in your midst. Because again, raising up leaders has been it's the life work of any of us in leadership. This is an Emotionally Healthy Leader podcast. That is our work, discipling people who can then disciple others. And so one of the first verses I learned when I came to Christ was 2 Timothy 2:2. When Paul says to Timothy, and the things I've given to you, pass on to faithful men and women who in turn will be able to teach others. And so you're looking for faithful, available, teachable people in your midst. And you're looking for folks who are really have, like the 12 disciples, left everything. Think of the rich young ruler. Jesus didn't choose him. He didn't even necessarily choose the scholars and the brilliant folks from the University of Jerusalem and the rabbis of his day. He took common folk, but they were willing to be shaped. They were abandoned. They were open. They've left everything to follow him. I always considered it a miracle that anybody would want to learn from me. I still consider it a miracle. Hey, I'm grateful you're listening to the podcast today. And so I always want to create a funnel. You know, think of like you know, Jesus had the multitudes, and then he had, we know from 1 Corinthians 15, there was 500 that he appeared to. Then we know he sent 70 out in Luke, the Gospel of Luke. Then he had the 12, which he spent a lot of time with. Then he had the three, Peter, James, and John. And Jesus actually waited before he chose the 12. And I love the verse in Luke chapter 6, verse 12. It says, in these days, he went up to a mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples together. And then the 12 names are given in Luke 6, verse 12. What's interesting is scholars debate how long did Jesus wait until he chose the 12? And this is what's a very important element for us, is that some scholars like A.B. Bruce, in a classic work he wrote on the 12, that believes that Jesus waited actually a year and a half before he actually chose these 12 among his much larger group of disciples. More other scholars probably say a year, others 9 months, but it was a while. Let's say between 9 months and 12 months or 15 months, Jesus waited before he chose that 12. In other words, it was a time in a sense of testing, of checking it out, like, are these folks really faithful, available, and teaching? And so we want to create smaller opportunities for people to model faithfulness, availability. But Jesus was selective. He was thinking long-term. He was thinking of this. Thomas is going to go to India someday. Mark is going to end up in Egypt. Peter's going to lead the church here in Jerusalem. And I like the verse. I make an application of when Paul is talking about elders. He says, don't be hasty on the laying on of hands in 1 Timothy 5. Don't be hasty in the laying on of hands. I think in the same way that principle applies is don't be hasty in choosing your three and your 12, because your time is very limited. And Jesus prayed all night. So prayer is a big element, that we're praying and asking God and getting discernment. And that's why it's important to create, in a sense, on-ramps for people slowly over time. So we would do things like weekend retreats, we run classes, we ran schools of leadership for a larger number of people, but we were seeking to be discerning of faithful, available, teachable people, and in a sense, help them self-select and getting a sense they get from God about, yeah, they're really hungry and want to learn from us. And that's kind of the basis of that prayer and discernment. All right, so say, okay, now you say, okay, Pete, I've got my three or my 12 that I sense these are the ones to invest in. I feel these are the right ones. Great. Now, what do I do? How do I do it with them? So let me just share a bit of our history over the last, I can't believe it's been over 45 years of doing this, and key learnings. What I think is our contribution here at Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. So within 9 months of coming to Christ at the age of 19, I was leading our Christian fellowship on our university campus. And we got associated with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. We were taught immediately, you got to make disciples. So it was in our DNA. But in our early years, it was about teaching the Bible, which I believe in, of course, and how to discover your gifts and evangelism, and heavy on theology, heavy on content. But the problem was, and also doing of ministry out there in the world. The problem was in those early years, this went through seminary where I went, you know, obviously got theologically trained, did a lot of study there, and then planted our church. And I kind of continued the traditional discipleship model, which I would consider heavy on Bible study, heavy on theological content. You know, we ran summer heavy discipleship camps, kind of in the sphere of a youth with a mission, their camps, where people would come and we'd do study in the morning and then evangelism in the afternoons. And we'd study books like the Gospel of Mark or Galatians or overview of the Bible. Then the afternoons we do evangelism or power evangelism or moving in the gifts of the Spirit or, you know, spiritual warfare. The problem was in these years, it was very limited, the transformation happening in the folks we were investing in. The turning point of our lives happened in when God met us and we discovered that emotional maturity and spiritual maturity cannot be separated, that it's not possible to be spiritually mature while remaining emotionally immature. That was a revolution. And so it shifted a before and after of how we invested in the 3 and the 12 and who we chose as well as 3 and the 12. And it went to a whole nother level in our development of people. It led to a basement group in our home where we would do on a yearly basis over a 16-year period when we were pastoring the church, where we would choose 14 to 18 people to be in our basement over a like a 9-month period. And we would meet every 2 weeks for 3 hours. And then we'd meet on every quarter for a whole weekend. But it was quite intensive. And all the leaders of our church kind of developed out of that over the years. And then we actually began, when we shifted to emotionally healthy discipleship after our 26 years as local church pastors and began to work with people from all over the world, we actually continued with doing intensive cohorts actually globally. And we've launched that as well. And our vision now, you can imagine, we're not a local church. The challenge of saying our vision at EH Discipleship is radically transforming the church that is addressing the crisis of shallow discipleship by training a new generation of pastors and leaders in a monastic slowdown spirituality with emotional health. It's these two ingredients together so these folks can lead out of a deep inner life with Jesus for the sake of Jesus' mission in the world. That's a big mission. And so we've got a kind of a different kind of funnel now. People who do, we kind of bring people into, come do the course. We're always encouraging, and I'll talk about this in a second, do the Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and Emotionally Healthy Relationships course, which we call Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, Part 1 and 2. Folks doing the course, and then they bring this to form a culture of their team or their ministry and church. That's the second level, and then they become champions. And at each level, we're investing more deeply in people until some are actually chosen to be part of an intensive cohort that meets over an 18-month period with Jerry and myself. So here's some of the distinctives that we've come into over the last almost 3 decades now in the way what we're doing with the 3 and a 12 that I highly, strongly recommend to you so that people are deeply transformed through this investment you're given of your time and energy, and of course money, it's sustainable long term beyond your lifespan. So here's some distinctives. First of all, is we're content driven. In other words, yes, we're doing life on life with people, but I think our unique contribution here at Emotionally Healthy Discipleship is we're offering unique content to actually integrate the Bible, not just know it in people's heads, but actually do it. And so the Emotionally Healthy Discipleship course, Part 1 and 2, has emerged out of this shift of integration of doing scripture and not just learning about it. And so the theology was formed in this discipleship. So things like learning grief and loss and knowing yourself that you may know God, knowing how you're uniquely made and how that fits into within God's larger purpose in the world, skills to love well, how a genogram, my family going back 3 to 4 generations, impacts who I am and how I function today in all areas. And so that framework we eventually put into what we call the Emotionally Healthy Discipleship Course, Part 1 and 2. Part 1 is Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and Part 2 is Emotionally Healthy Relationships. And again, it was the fruit of over 20 years of work. I want to invite you to actually download, check it out. You don't have to buy the whole thing by any means at this point, but if you go to emotionallyhealthy.org/preview, you can download two free sessions, one from Emotionally Healthy Relationships and one from Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. You can watch the videos, you can download the workbook, the daily offices as well that go with it, the devotionals, and you'll get a sense of, wow, okay, this has got some content to it. So yes, there's nothing more important than you're giving away your life. That's why who you are is more important than what you say. You can't give what you don't possess. And we focus so much on your being. So you want to get into this material for yourself so you can actually give it away out of your life. But the content is, I believe, the unique contribution we're bringing to the whole global church for deep transformation in leaders' lives that they could then, you can eventually bring to your people that you're seeking to mentor. So you want to get into that yourself, because as you'll find, you have to do it and not just read about it or listen to it in a podcast. Then you can give it away. So the first key part is of how is you need some great content. And I think we've developed over these decades some great content for you to use. Secondly, is it's got to be experiential and not just cognitive. In other words, it's got to be right brain, not just left brain. Left brain means logical, thinking, linear, which is all good. But we're whole people, and it's got to be right brain, which means we actually got to do it as well. I mean, Jesus models that for the 12, that it wasn't just preaching to the multitudes or preaching more sermons to them in private. He had them watching, doing, interacting. It was very much an experiential model of discipleship. And so we made a dramatic shift in the way that we discipled people and made it experiential. And you'll see as you get deeper into Emotionally Healthy Discipleship that all of our materials are experiential and not just cognitive. Thirdly, it's planning and being thoughtful. Third big distinctive is being thoughtful and planning what you're going to do. We're always working on what we're going to do and people that we're mentoring. Fourthly, it's time limited. So we like to put a time limit on. We're going to mentor for 18 months or 9 months or even 6 months. We don't want to overfunction. We don't want people to hold on to us. I love when Jesus says after his resurrection, don't hold on to me. I'm going to send the Spirit to you. And part of his discipleship is they have to let go of him and move into their own role of leadership, or at least let go of the physical Jesus so that they can follow the Holy Spirit, what God has for them. In the same way, we don't ever want to overfunction and get people too dependent on us. And again, that begins with prayer and being very key about that. Also, another key distinctive is Jerry and I are always learning. We're growing now. We're growing like crazy. We're always being transformed ourselves, out of which we're giving to other people. So that's very, very key. And finally, we call people to commitment. In fact, we invite people in, but we raise the standards of expectations. Again, we want to be, it's one of the skills, right? Spoken, conscious, realistic, and agreed upon. What does it mean to be part of a group that's going to be mentored and discipled by us? It's a privilege to mentor or disciple anybody. It's a privilege to be mentored and discipled. And we say to people, it's going to change your life dramatically. But it's a big commitment of your time and our time. And so part of the clarifying of expectations is for discernment. It's for your discernment. Are these the people God's calling to be part of this? And then also it's for their discernment. Oh, do I really sense God's calling me to do this right now at this season of my life with Pete? There's lots of people who could mentor other people, but God's got people for you to disciple and mentor your 3 and your 12. So we want to use our positions, our power in a sense, as leaders. However God's given you power, authority as a leader, and maybe in a small way or a large way, you want to leverage that with a few over a long period of time, because that's what Jesus did. And it was powerful. Now, listen, we had mixed fruit. Did everybody work out? No, not by any means. I would walk down the stairs into our basement. I would often walk into a meeting one-on-one at a diner with someone, or one-on-two. And I hear this voice and say, you're a loser, Pete. You don't know what you're doing. This is going nowhere. So, I mean, it's challenging, and not everybody works out. I mean, Jesus had his Judas, okay? I mean, hey, and sometimes the soil appears good, and then you find out it's rocky or it's thorny. And you find out, before you know it, the person is making a judgment on you. Maybe you're not biblical enough. I've heard that. Or you're not intellectual enough, whatever. So again, it's in the hands of God. And so at the same time, remember this, that while we recommend time limits, you know, a year or 18 months or whatever with folks, there are some people to whom God is calling you to walk with long-term over years. We have a few people that we have been, in a sense, in a mentoring relationship over a very long period of time. And it's wonderful. It's just, it's organic. It's natural. It's, but one thing is clear. This takes longer than you think. And we've always, and I'll use the word always, said, really more Jerry has said it to me, and I agree with her 100%, after, say, a 12-month group or a very intensive group, she goes, gee, that was just the beginning. And I'd be like, yeah, like they need to do it two or three times. And again, it's part of your calling. And remember, there's some that you will walk with long-term, maybe two or three people over many years or decades like we have. What's really wonderful is that when you see people that you've invested in, they are then investing in others. They're actually holding people highly accountable, like Jesus did with the 12, and highly accountable in a sense of really in their lives, really watching for those moments that are key discipleship moments where they've not integrated biblical truth that they may know in their heads, but not actually in their practice. Those are key. So my invitation to you is throughout the year, we offer a free webinar that's called How to Develop High Impact Leaders and Disciple Makers in Your Church. It's a 1-hour webinar. It's free. I speak for about 30, 35 minutes with a couple of our leaders. And then we take some questions, but if I had 30, 35 minutes, I'd spend that talking to you about that right now. And we do it, 2, 3, 4 times a year. And I want to encourage you to go to our website, check it out, go to emotionallyhealthy.org/high impact and sign up for that free webinar. It'll be a natural flow of how do we actually integrate this content into discipling the 3 and the 12. Again, it's emotionallyhealthy.org/high impact. And even if the one that you go into that website, into our website, you'll see, oh, it's filled. Just put your name on that mailing list and so that you'll notify the next time it comes around, because it's really worth coming to. And trust me, God's going to do far more than you ever, ever, ever imagined. If you'll take this countercultural mustard seed revolutionary path of Jesus, in that regardless of what your responsibilities may be in the church that may not even be considered written down that you're making disciples, but that you say, no, this is my priority. I'm going to build out of this. God will do things you never, ever imagined. That I can promise. All right, let me end with just a couple of FAQs because of time here. One FAQ, what is the difference between mentoring Pete and discipling of the few? In some ways I consider all of leadership is mentoring and discipling others. In other words, preaching a sermon, I'm mentoring a multitude. Writing a book, I'm mentoring. Doing this podcast, there's a discipling element of what we're doing. So in a sense, all of life, I'm giving away out of which God has given me. So I'm making disciples. But there is the model of Jesus of the 3 and the 12. And that's our focus here today. And that's the most difficult to sustain over time because of the pressure of so many things to do. So again, you want to make a distinction of the 3 and the 12 with the larger life work that you're called to in discipling and mentoring others. And then the question, what about my neighbors? What about missional communities? What about, you know, evangelism on the streets and all that? Well, I think that's all good. I think it's important. But let's look at the model of Jesus. Yes, there was evangelism going on, but he spent increasing amounts of time as his 3 years came to a close. Most scholars believe he was spending up to half his time with the 12 disciples in that final year, minimally that final 6 months, because he was investing the future in them, and he models that for us. Someone said, but Jesus didn't have boards. He wasn't building an organization. He didn't have volunteers and ministry leaders and all the complexity that I'm juggling, Pete. Well, that is true. That is true. But if we sat here, he had a lot of other challenges that you don't have in your discipleship. So again, bless you. I pray the hands of God on you and that you may see by the grace of God that you actually are able. You've been given by God grace and gifts and knowledge and life of Jesus in you that you are meant to give away to others. And may God give you the confidence that, yeah, you too are growing into a spiritual mother and father of the faith, and that you too, your life is to have the same impact and can have the same impact of Jesus's life that would endure beyond your lifetime, when folks would stand on your shoulders and do things greater and larger things than you ever dreamed. So bless you, everybody. Been great to be with you. And I pray that this may encourage you to step out and trust Jesus to use your life as I do the same. Blessings. Have a great day.